A new week, and the shrewd listeners among you may have noticed that we haven't done all of the team previews yet. We took a little break from that to get into some other stuff. The over-unders, of course, were long overdue. Definitely go back and listen to some of those pods. Ben Taylor, if you didn't listen to that one because you don't know who he has done probably the best work of anyone going back and looking at the greatest players of all time in his series, a more rigorous analytical approach than any that I've seen that's been done before. So that was a great pod. We did the top eight players of all time, but now it's time to talk about the team that probably has the most anticipated season preview of any of these, and that is the LA Lakers. And joining us, per usual, a valued and honored guest, Darius Soriano. How you doing, man?
I'm good, Nate. And yourself?
Doing well. I'm actually finally back in the Bay Area after a month out after I got married. So I'm actually like really raring to go again. I got like the good audio quality again back in my office. So ready to get started.
No, well, don't tell Danny, but we missed you. So it's good to have you back. It's good to have you back.
Well, awesome. Awesome. So I think the place to start here, we've got a little bit of preseason under our belt, which we're privileged to have versus the previews that we do a little earlier. And so just what are your overall impressions so far of this Lakers team in preseason, given, of course, that LeBron is playing limited minutes?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think one of the first thing that stands out to me is that they're playing really fast, like really, really fast. I know that playing the Nuggets can sort of boost up your pace as well, right? Because the Nuggets want to get up and down the floor as well. But they're looking to run at every opportunity, even off of opponent makes. They're really sort of getting the ball inbounds fast and pushing the ball up floor. And so I think the pace that they're playing at has been something that stood out from a positive standpoint. I think on a negative side, the defense is clearly a work in progress. There's a lot of moving parts on that side of the ball. I think the limited minutes for some of their players and Lonzo Ball not yet playing, that sort of has not helped with the defensive continuity stuff that I think I'd like to see them a little bit farther along in there. But I also think that you have to be patient. Defense, even more so than offense, I feel is going to be built on like, where are my teammates? Where can I trust the help? Is everyone making the right decision and moving on a string? All of those things are going to be really tied to chemistry. And so this is where I think guys being out has hurt them a little bit.
Yeah, let me react to both of those. The running, I think, is going to be huge for this team, because especially with a lot of the lineups that they have, they don't have a ton of shooting, but they do have a ton of athleticism. Brandon Ingram, he's shooting 16 of 22 at the rim so far in preseason. Josh Hart has looked really good getting to the rim. LeBron might be the greatest perimeter finisher of all time. And so if they can push the ball hard, and with LeBron when he's willing, Lonzo, Rondo, plenty of guys who can grab and go, I think that can be one of the biggest foundations of this offense. And it was a question of, with LeBron here, are they going to keep up that great pace that they had last year at Luke Walton's behest? It looks like that'll be the case so far. Maybe not at the end of games. LeBron will kind of want to slow things down. And then defensively, it's been pretty rough so far. And I mean, you just wonder, it seems like their lineups are going to be either JaVale McGee at center, Ivica Zubac, if he plays at center, probably not that much, or Kyle Kuzma at center. We were talking about LeBron at center. It seems like they're going to try Kuzma there first. And while the impact of centers defensively isn't as high as it once was, it is tough to have a good defense when you've got either Kyle Kuzma or JaVale McGee as your center.
Yeah, I'm not high on Kuzma at center, to tell you the truth. Like, I'm more pessimistic than optimistic on that. On a recent podcast that I did for the Laker Film Room podcast, we went into a little bit more detail about that, but just this idea that Kuzma, who is not, or at least as a rookie, did not show that he could be a plus defender even at his own position, which was mostly power forward, to now tell him that he's going to play defensive center, which is going to be a more challenging position. He's going to be guarding much bigger players than him. I wonder if that's going to impact his leg legs as a shooter on the offensive side of the ball. Even if the Lakers start to switch a fair amount more as a defensive center, you're likely going to be switching on to primary ball handlers and shot creators, either point guards or shooting guards. And those are positions where Kuzma is going to have a fair amount of trouble. I think he can switch, you know, some, but asking him to guard bigs and then, or guard a center and then switch onto a point guard, those are not playing to his defensive strengths at all at this point, I feel like. And then with McGee, you know, he can protect the rim, and he had a game the other night. He had five block shots, and he can sort of be a presence down there. But so much of that backline defense is also just going to be rotating quickly and early to even deter those shots at the rim. And I wonder if he's going to have the wind to play and be as reactive as he needs to for like 25 minutes a night versus the 12 or 13 that he was playing in Golden State last year.
Yeah, I mean, if that's really the plan to play him 25 minutes a night, I mean, I think most people thought, well, okay, they only signed JaVale and they're just going to not play him that much. You know, he'll play the number of minutes he would play in Golden State. And, you know, I didn't even necessarily think he was going to start. And so now he's starting on this team and he's going to play a lot of minutes. And you just wonder again, I mean, we've seen many a time he could block shots, but his awareness is so bad. And then, you know, you've got guys like Michael Beasley coming in as well, who are not great. I think they can get to some very good defensive lineups, especially if LeBron is locked in. But we've also seen, you know, LeBron just totally check out defensively. He did that last year. And if these guys are just making mistakes around him, he doesn't like being like, oh yeah, I'll erase your mistake, like we're all on the same team. He can kind of get a little pouty when guys don't execute and yell at him instead of just like, oh, I'm going to make this emergency rotation and take care of it for you. And so, you know, I think in a lot of ways, LeBron kind of defends the way the rest of the team defends. And so if they're not there, I was surprised because I wasn't as concerned about this team's defense before watching some preseason and really starting to lock in on them, because I felt like I really liked the defense of some of their young guys, Hart, Ball, and Ingram. Even if maybe they're a little overrated, those guys are all solid defenders. You throw LeBron in there and then you'd think you could come up with a solid defense. And how are you feeling about things at this point?
It's probably my biggest concern at this point is sort of finding ways to those lineups defensively, and also just how aggressive are they going to be defensively. I think ideally what you want from this team is sort of, if not to the level that they did it last season, but sort of like Houston, where they're primarily a switching team. I think even if JaVale isn't like the best big man switching defender, and not nearly in the same class as like a Clint Capella, I think 1 through 4, if you have lineups with Lonzo and Hart and Ingram and LeBron, and then even Kuzma at one of those forward spots or the other big man spot as well, that you would just switch a lot. And I feel like when you switch, then you take some of that guessing game out of the rotations on the backside that can get a lot of these guys in trouble. Like you were talking about LeBron sort of checking out defensively. I think a lot of those issues come as a backside and weak side defender more so than
sure.
If he's cleared out and on the ball, right? Because I think that in those on the ball situations, he's going to be more dialed in and more locked in, like, and he's going to take those matchups personally. But on the backside, is he going to make the extra rotation? Is he going to switch haphazardly and sort of point, you know, I saw
is he gonna close out too? I mean, that's the other one as well.
Well, also too, if you're defensive power forward, right, some of your responsibilities are going to be tag and then back to the perimeter to close out and then maybe back to the paint again to go rebound, right? And those are hard rotations for anyone in the league, much less like a guy who's coming into his 16th season. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say LeBron can't do it, but is he going to want to do it and have that want want over an 82 game season. And I'm not exactly sure, and I'm not even sure if we should expect it per se, right? So it's something that I'm certainly concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's fair. We saw with Cleveland last year, he was probably their best defensive player, and given his offensive load and his age, I mean, it isn't fair to ask him to do that. We see what he's capable of in small bursts, but even he, now going into his age 34 season, to expect that kind of a level on a night-to-night basis for an 82 game regular season does seem pretty unrealistic. So go ahead, sorry.
No, just let me say one more thing, though, is I think the hope is that he will have less of an offensive burden with this team, that he will not be leading the league in minutes per game or total minutes played this year, and that if you can get him at a bit of a lower offensive workload and cut his minutes from 38 a game to 33 to 35 a game, that you might be able to get more out of him defensively. And I'm guessing that's sort of the plan with him going into the year, but obviously it's a long season and we're going to have to see how that plays.
Yeah, and we'll see whether, again, that a lot of the question, from some of the people that in the media that know him best is, all right, he signed this 3+1, he's here for the long haul. What happens when you get into the season and, things may not be going as well as he expects, and he realizes this team really isn't a championship contender, and he may intellectually realize that now, but living that on a day-to-day basis, how is he going to feel about that and react to that is going to be very interesting, I think.
Yeah, I certainly think that that's one of the storylines. I'm not sure if it's right to be optimistic or pessimistic either way in that direction, to tell you the truth.
Is that not fair of me to say that these guys are not a championship contender this year?
I think that that's totally fair, right? We're in the day that we're recording this, it's the first week of October. The way that they look right now, it is Golden State, and then depending on how you feel about Houston and Utah, right? Like, that's probably the next tier down. And then underneath that, there's probably a group of seven teams fighting for those last five playoff spots, and the Lakers are in that mix somewhere. And if you want to talk about how you build a team, like half or more than half of this roster has turned over, there are going to be continuity issues, and there are teams who are starting ahead of them just based simply on the fact that they have brought back essentially their full roster or made complementary type changes to their roster in order to build on top of what they already had. And so the Lakers are starting from behind on those guys. And so you're totally fair in saying that at this point, they're not a championship contender. They're just not. And even the most optimistic person shouldn't be saying that. You can say that they can get to a point where they can be a dangerous playoff team, right, by the time they get to March or April. But that's a different type of conversation than saying this is what they are right now and they're ready to compete at that level, because they're not.
I will say this, though. I mean, I think if they get development from the young guys and they could pick up, Kawhi Leonard, he's not going to be available in trade very likely this year, or, Jimmy Butler or something like that. Like, it looks like that ship has sailed. It might get revisited at the trade deadline for them picking up another star. But I'm assuming that's not on the table. But if you could get either a solid defensive center, a center who could shoot, or you could get one more guy on the wing who could shoot, I think all of a sudden these pieces would fit together a lot better, because I do think that they're young guys, and a lot of these guys will have to see Lonzo Ball, where he's at from a shooting standpoint as well, and what some of the combinations look like. But I do think that they're a couple of pieces away, but those pieces could potentially be obtained, and then they could be a lot more dangerous.
I certainly agree. They're like a piece and a half away, I feel like, right? Like one or two, I'm with you. 100%. One more like dead-eye shooter type of wing who could actually play against the top offenses as a defensive player, and another defensive-minded center who can pick and roll or pick and pop, and could be a guy who either leapfrogs JaVale McGee or supplements him as another another like 15 to 20 minute player. I think that those are two types of pieces that I'm sure this front office knows that they should be looking for throughout the season and even going into next offseason, right?
Yeah, and that team may not beat the Warriors or Houston, but that could be, that sort of team I think is, you know, a high 50s type of win team potentially. But, you know, I still wonder, and obviously we'll have to see how the young guys come along as well here. So I want to talk a little bit, as we've started to allude to here, about what the rotational battles look like. And why don't we start at point guard. Lonzo Ball, coming off of knee surgery, has been playing 5-on-5. They hope that he can make his preseason debut later this week. But what's it looking like as far as the playing time battle between he and Rajon Rondo, who they brought in and paid $9 million this year?
Yeah, I think that Rondo is being set up to be at least the early season starter. They're really being cautious with Lonzo Ball. I think part of it is also just a conditioning standpoint. You know, he did a lot of work in the weight room this year, and he's bulked up. But as you know, right, he had knee surgery this offseason. Before he had knee surgery to repair that or shave off part of his meniscus, he took a PRP injection. He was off of his leg for a month in order to try to get that PRP injection to take and see if that would stimulate the healing that he wanted. So I could only imagine that his conditioning has not been where the team would want it to be. And I would venture to guess that one of the reasons that he's being held out to this point isn't necessarily because his knee isn't sound at this point. I would bet it's more that they don't feel like he's in game shape and ready to actually get up and down the floor the way that they want. And they want to put him in best positions to succeed. So in saying all that, I would imagine that Rondo is going to be the starter to start the year, but it would not surprise me if by December or so that Lonzo is, if not the starting point guard, playing the majority of the minutes, like, and inching up towards that 28 to 30 minutes a game that he likely should be. I don't know if you feel the same way about that, but that's what.
Yeah, I think that Lonzo, especially defensively, I think it is very underrated how bad Rondo is defensively. If you're trying to switch, he just completely gives up anytime he's posted up. And he just, you know, he has absolutely zero physicality at this point in his career. Won't try to get over a screen as well. And, you know, I mean, he'll make these kind of like cute, smart plays, but he's just not giving the effort on a game-to-game basis. So I think you can make the argument maybe that Rondo is a better offensive player than Ball. I mean, they both have their finishing difficulties around the rim. Rondo actually makes open threes better than Ball has so far in his career, though, you know, Ball certainly is willing to shoot more and so probably is going to get guarded more than Rondo would. And obviously they're both outstanding passers. Maybe Rondo is a little bit better in that category because he's kind of got it figured out a little bit more how to keep the ball in his hands and gnash under the rim and find passing angles to guys, at least pretend to be more of a threat finishing around the room, which Lonzo hasn't quite got that down yet. But I think the defensive difference between them is so large that, you know, Lonzo was probably a better player to me, maybe even last year. And, you know, if he takes a step forward and Rondo is a little older, you know, I do expect Ball to be the better player this year.
Yeah, I think as passers, the difference between them is that Rondo's probably in the half court, at least a more creative passer and more of a chess player as a passer, just in terms of the stuff that you described, you know, keeping his dribble alive and sort of manipulating back line and weak side defenders, and then finding a guy who's slashing backside or circling around weak side for an open shot. What I appreciate about Lonzo more as a passer in the half court is that he's such a quick decision maker. So he can make some of those secondary read passes as Rondo can, but Lonzo's also a guy who, when the ball is on its way to him, he has a pretty good idea about where the next pass is going. And if he doesn't see an initial advantage for him as an offensive player to either drive or shoot his own jumper, the ball is out of his hands almost instantly on to the next player. And I think that is an aspect of his individual offensive game that helps sort of grease the wheels for team offensive success in ways that maybe the whole probing and probing that Rondo might offer doesn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement there. Let's move to the two. KCP started all last year, had, I think, an underrated year, especially when he wasn't under house arrest. Shot threes the best of his career. Another guy who's pretty good in transition. Solid defender. I thought that he was a big part of their defensive improvement last year on the perimeter. And you've got Josh Hart as well at the two. I would hope that it wouldn't necessarily be an either-or proposition with those two guys, that they might be able to play a little bit together, especially since Hart is pretty strong and he's got good length. But it looks like that's not necessarily in the cards. Who's the inside track to start at this point?
I actually think it's Hart. KCP did get the start in the Lakers' last preseason game on Saturday against the Clippers after two consecutive starts by Josh Hart as shooting guard. So over the Lakers' four preseason games, KCP has started twice and Hart has started twice. KCP was horrid the Lakers' first two preseason games. He was horrid offensively and defensively. He didn't look like himself from last season. That's gotten a bit better over the last couple of preseason games, and so it doesn't surprise me that he got the start in the fourth game. I'm 100% with you that they could play both of them together at both sort of shooting guard and small forward. I think that they bring different things to the table defensively, so I see KCP as more of like a lock and trail and passing lane defender. So guys who move off of screens a fair amount, you know, from watching the way that he's defended Steph Curry, for example, that he does a fairly good job of chasing Steph around screens and being physical where he can be, but sort of using his frame to sort of get into Steph's body and not allow him that free movement coming off of picks. Hart is just a much better switching defender, and that's where KCP suffers, similar to Rondo. And so I think that Hart's ability to switch and Hart's superior ability to sort of get to the basket and be a grab and go player. So you mentioned that KCP is good in transition, and he certainly is. He can fill the lane, the outside lane, and get to the basket and finish. He can shoot the pull up three in transition as well. But Hart can do both of those things as well. But Hart can also be a grab and go player. And so to me, Hart is the superior transition player at this stage. And with his defensive versatility as someone who can guard up a position rather than KCP, who can guard down a position, like defend point guards better, I think that Hart has the inside track. We'll see if Walton feels the same way, but I think Hart's an up and coming guy, and that long term, this is his position to lose. And with KCP on a 1-year deal, I get the sense that they're going to invest more into Hart this season.
Yeah, and now that LeBron is on the team, although there's always AD now, he's a Rich Paul client too, there may be a little bit less of an impetus to just try to mollify Rich Paul. But yeah, I think it's tough. We might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves on Hart, although I certainly like him a lot. You know, we haven't seen him play at the highest levels during a regular season yet. He showed flashes last year, then he had that, I think it was a wrist injury. I can't remember if it was wrist or hand, where he missed most of the end of the season. And then, you know, when he played great in summer league, but a lot of that was kind of on ball stuff. I have been very impressed with just his 3-point attempt rate, some of the shots that he's able to get up, very versatile jump shot. But to me, the reason I think those guys need to play together is because those are the only two guys on this team who can make a three and play any defense.
Yeah, they are both they definitely are the team's best two-way players in terms of shooting and defense. I have high hopes for Ingram there. He shot 39% on three-pointers last year, but on a very low volume, I think about 1.8 attempts a game.
Yeah.
And so I'd be interested to see if Ingram can stay in that like 36 to 38 range on like 2.5, 3.5 attempts per game. That remains to be seen. So I have hopes for Ingram there, but like right now in terms of proven, you're certainly right. Like it'd be interesting to me to see lineups with like KCP, Hart, Ingram, LeBron, and like JaVale, for example.
Yeah.
Just because I think that Ingram can be the nominal point guard or LeBron the nominal point guard offensively. And then defensively, you have KCP and Hart guarding the backcourt positions.
Yeah, so no traditional point guard on the floor, you're saying?
Yeah, that's right.
I like that too.
You know, Ingram actually played a ton of minutes at point guard his first two seasons. You know, last year when Lonzo Ball was hurt in that middle part of the season, it was Ingram who took over primary ball handling duties and was essentially the starting point guard. And that's where he really started to take off as a player. When Lonzo has been out this entire preseason, Ingram has done a fair amount of ball handling with the first unit, even in games where Rondo played as well. So I don't think it's a stretch to give the ball to Ingram and say, okay, like, you're going to initiate our offense. You're going to run some pick and roll. And then obviously LeBron is there too. So you know, like I'm very high on Lonzo. I'm not trying to take the ball out of his hands by any means. And I think that if Lonzo could get his percentages up into the like 33 to 35% range on the volume of threes that he was taking last season, that he could be another one of those guys. Sure. Who, just like you said, Kim, can be a two-way player who's shooting and defending well. So I have hopes for those guys, but I also have hopes that Luke is going to find ways to get these guys in positions on the floor where, like, he's using the versatility of these players to optimize lineups.
And that, I think, is going to be very interesting, because we've seen that Ingram has had the ball in his hands a lot in that second Denver game. You know, LeBron was very efficient, but he was not operating with the ball in his hands a ton. He certainly wasn't really, you know, to the extent that he was getting the ball, it was trying to get him the ball on the move after they did something on the other side. You know, it wasn't kind of the more traditional pick and roll post up stuff that we saw at Cleveland, where he's creating everything and then finding shooters. And, you know, I think that is a good sign. But if you don't have enough shooters, even with that type of action, you can misdirect all you want, but if the guys don't need to be guarded, that can be mucked up a little bit. And so, you know, with Rondo, I mean, he shot the ball well, but again, you know, not a guy who looks to take that shot as a first resort. And then Ingram is 0 for 5 in four games this preseason. He's playing 27 minutes a game. He's, I think, taken four above the break and one in the corner. So, and it doesn't really look like, just watching it, that, you know, he's even spending that much time, like, spotted up. You know, they're hoping to get him, again, the ball on the move. He's initiating a lot of the offense. But at some point, somebody's got to finish these plays that they're trying to create. And we've also seen a bunch of possessions where, you know, guys have gotten penetration and they throw it out to another guy, and then he doesn't want to take the three. He'll drive in, and then he wants to be unselfish and find someone else. And there's no one who actually, other than JaVale McGee, you know, around the rim, who's actually finishing these plays that they're creating. And so there's definitely a concern for me that this, despite liking a lot of these individual pieces, that it may not work together as well as people hope, certainly in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that they certainly have to find the right balance between taking the open shot that's there versus trying to move the ball on for a better shot. I actually tweeted this a few days ago that this is where I think the Lakers miss Lonzo's shooting. And I said, it's going to sound weird that I'm saying this, but it's not because he shoots this high percentage, but it's because he's such a willing three-point shooter, and that you need someone who is going to be willing to take those shots outside of Hart and KCP and Kuzma, right? Because those are really the three players who will enjoy shooting a high volume of threes, who project to be rotation players at this point. And so I think that you can, the hope is to get Lonzo back, to find more lineups with two or three of those foursome of KCP, Hart, Ball, and Kuzma on the floor at the same time, in order to generate, if not actual spacing, because all of these shots are going in, that then the type of spacing that exists from, like, willingness of shot, yeah, right? Like, because you can generate gravity as well just by showing a proclivity to actually put those shots up. Like, people are not going to close out at you if you're just going to swing the ball on to the next guy, or when the ball comes to you, the first thing you're doing is looking to put the ball on the ground and then get to the rim, the way that guys like Rondo or Lance Stephenson are.
All right, so a little bit lower in the rotation here, these three guys, Lance Stephenson, Mike Beasley, Svi Mykhailiuk, who has been talked up a lot as a shooter, but obviously as a rookie, but a very very experienced one. Of those three guys, put those guys in order of who you think is going to play the most. I know they're not quite competing with one another necessarily for minutes, but they do kind of need one more slot there at the 2 through 4 positions, I think, especially if there are going to be injuries. So what do you think about how those three guys are going to get used?
Right now, I think it's Lance who is in the lead. He's been getting a fair amount of like second unit minutes as like a primary ball handler. So they've been using him as sort of this de facto backup point guard, especially since Lonzo has been out. So he's been getting minutes there. Mikhailuk has basically been one of those end of the bench players. He's gotten a couple of stints with like real second unit guys, but has mostly been sort of the garbage time player when the fourth quarter rolls around and it's sort of the South Bay Lakers, right? Yeah. Where he's it's Caruso and Travis Ware, and then there's Mikhailuk there with that group. Beasley's an interesting case because we were talking earlier about who might get those backup 5 minutes, and I think that they're going to try Beasley there as well, besides just trying Kyle Kuzma there. So Beasley to me is more of like a 4 or 5, whereas I think Svi and Lance are more in direct competition for those minutes. And so right now, if I had to slot them, it would be Lance and then Beasley and then Svi, who needs to basically show that he could make shots, but even more importantly, that he's not going to have any defensive lapses. Because if Svi can't show that he can at least be a notch ahead of the veteran guys defensively, then I don't think he's going to get on the floor, honestly.
No, I mean, and he's, it's whenever someone's on the Lakers, you know, they, and plays well in summer league, they kind of get talked up a little bit. And, you know, he certainly did well. And he's a guy who I loved going back all the way to the 2014 Hoop Summit. I thought he was like, when he was a 16-year-old, he looked awesome, but he never really developed in that type of a way. But he has apparently turned himself into a knockdown shooter. But, you know, he's, what was he drafted? 47th. So I think it's, tough to say that he's going to break into the rotation, at least on a good team. You think Zubac is going to play at all?
I do, actually. Early on, at least, I think that he's going to get some of those backup center minutes against bigger players, especially if it's showing that Kuzma or Beasley isn't necessarily defensively stout enough. Zubac is an interesting guy. Of all the past several years players that the Lakers have drafted, he's really the only one who hasn't sort of at least shown that he could be a viable NBA player to this point. Like I kind of say that he's NBA adjacent, because he is too good for the G League, but he's not yet shown that he is good enough for the NBA as like even a 10 minute a night player. But he's got some tools, and it would not surprise me to see him get a handful of minutes here or there. He came into camp after playing some really good minutes for the Croatian national team, and he looked good during his national team play, and then he got some sort of virus, and so he looked very sluggish at the start of training camp. But the last couple games he's looked a lot better, and so I hope that trending up continues, because the Lakers could really use another big body, just like we were talking about earlier, and Zubac could in theory be that guy, considering the tools that he has on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I think I'm still concerned that he's too slow, but he might actually be their best defensive center, but you know, not a ton of competition in that area at this point. And it's definitely, I was so encouraged when they didn't spend a ton of resources on centers this offseason, thinking that, oh, they're just going to not play centers. And you know, I'm not sure whether that's what they're actually going to do or not. I mean, they do have a lot of ways that they can go. Each of them kind of has their flaws though, but you know, in terms of just traditional big men, this might be the worst team in the league in terms of the traditional big men that they have on the roster. And so if you're going to play these guys, I get that JaVale is actually a very good offensive center, but you know, he gives such a place to attack on defense, and then you can't switch, which you know makes things so much easier for a lot of these guys. So it's difficult go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, let me ask you this. The elephant of the room here when we're talking about the Lakers rotation is really LeBron, right? Because they've been tap dancing around that, really, right? They've been playing Kuzma there. They've been playing Michael Beasley there. They've got JaVale playing minutes. They've given Zubac his time there. But the one guy who hasn't really been playing in minutes there is LeBron. Long term, you as like an outside observer, do you see him getting, you know, the 5 to 8 minutes a night at center?
That's really interesting because it was a very rarely gone to alignment in Cleveland because they had Kevin Love and they had Tristan Thompson. Like those were some of their best guys. So it didn't necessarily make that much sense. Every once in a while against the Warriors, they'd go with LeBron at center. By my recollection, those lineups usually didn't do too well defensively. They didn't have necessarily the communication. Certainly from a physical standpoint, James is their best option at center. And, you know, he's strong enough that basically anyone trying to post him up, you know, he might be, if he put his mind to it and really tried hard on a given possession, still one of the best post defenders in the league, even if he has to guard, you know, a Karl Anthony Towns or something like that. But it's very clear to me, he has always even chafed at having to play power forward in his career. Now that the league has kind of evolved around him to where it'd be ridiculous if he didn't. But, you know, does he want to bang and play center, you know, and really embrace that role, you know, the way someone like Draymond Green would? You know, James has close to that level of talent defensively if he tries to bring it. You know, I think so much of it depends just on what his attitude is going to be. If his attitude is, all right, you know, this is a work in progress, but I'm going to do everything that it takes here, you know, even during the regular season at times to play center and bring these guys home and will them to victory. Or is he going to say, you know what, hey, we're not close here. These guys just aren't good enough. You know, I'm going to kill on offense, but I'm not going to do the little things every night, or, you know, I'm not going to do that until the playoffs. It's just, I think it's wholly a question of attitude. I think he's entirely capable. And, you know, is Luke Walton empowered enough to say, hey, LeBron, you're going to do this, even though it's not the number one thing that you want to do. And, you know, when James is asked to do things he doesn't want to do, he can kind of check out the way he did, you know, with Cleveland for a month last year in January. So I think it would be great that way. It's easy for me to say from here, I don't have to go through 82 games with the number of miles on my body that he does. So I think the fact that they're not even really considering it this early is not a great sign.
Yeah, I think that cuts both ways for me personally. I'm not sure if saying, it's like the double-edged sword of, yes, we'd like to see minutes with this during the preseason and yeah, sort I mean, of start to build
I'm sure habits. if it were up to him, he'd play 0 minutes the entire preseason, probably. You know,
yes,
so.
Yeah, like he does not, and I saw Luke Walton answer a question about this during one of the preseason games, and he expertly dodged it, right? Because they were basically asking him, like, look, LeBron doesn't need minutes to get ready for the season, but you need him in the lineup during the preseason in order to start to build some of these habits and build up the chemistry that he's going to need to have with a brand new team. Like, how do you balance that? And he basically just dodged the question entirely. And so I think the same thing can be true for like minutes for LeBron at center, right, during the preseason, because I'm sure that the Lakers would want to get at least a look at that during the preseason. But I also know for a fact, if you're gonna maybe have to call on that, and you know it might be this sort of negotiation between the coach and the player to get him to do that, do you want to burn or do you want to fire any of those bullets during meaningless minutes in the first 2 weeks of October, right? So yeah, so I'm not exactly sure where we're at with that, to tell you the truth. But I think long term, when like this whole idea of a Lakers quote unquote death lineup is the premise of that is LeBron James at center. It's not Kyle Kuzma at center.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to look too good. I don't think with Kuzma at center. And I think just that really hangs over this entire season is just kind of, what is LeBron's attitude going to be? I mean, we've seen, you know, other guys kind of running the show, supposedly Magic, although if you're believing that LeBron was sold on June 30th and coming to the Lakers, I don't know what to tell you there. But, you know, supposedly Magic's vision, which, you know, when they made all those signings and then everyone was calling the Lakers idiots and, you know, they kind of leaked to Romano that, like, you know, no, this is actually like what we're thinking here is to like have LeBron be in the post more, have him play off the ball more. And okay, you know, if he's going to really be a part of the team concept there, is he really going to be just another cog in the machine defensively? Or is he going to be, you know what? No, I am apart from this. You know, these are a bunch of young guys. You know, and I don't know that he's even, is he going to have a bunch of a relationship with these guys off the court? Who knows? He's at a completely different point in his life than the rest of these guys. You know, so is he going to say, demand, all right, you know what? Things aren't going well. Now we're going to run everything through me again. And then this team isn't really equipped to just have the supporting pieces around a LeBron James the way, say, Cleveland was. So, you know, I think so much of it just depends on like what LeBron's attitude throughout the season is. And certainly that's been good so far. He signed the 3-year contract. I mean, you can imagine what it would be like if he had signed a 1+1, you know, and things don't go well. So at least they've got that pressure off of them. But I still think it's going to be so interesting to see what his attitude is going to be. And is he going to be used the same way as in Cleveland? Or are they going to find some other way to use him? And do they have the personnel to do either of those things?
It's interesting to me. So the one thing that I will say is that last year LeBron in Cleveland was probably one of the most joyless LeBron seasons I'd seen since maybe his last season in Cleveland the first time before he went to the Heat. And I'm sure a lot of factors went into that for LeBron, right? The like contract year and staying versus going and the fallout from the Kyrie Irving trade and, you know, how that didn't work out. And this idea of another long playoff run with like the juggernaut Warriors waiting for him in the finals potentially. So I could understand that there's a lot of stuff that goes into how his demeanor was last season. What I will say is that he's seemed, at least from my perspective, he has seemed very much at peace and happy with where he is at this stage. Now, how that carries out throughout the season remains to be seen, but I like the starting point where he's at right now, you know, sort of saying all of the right things and showing a connection to guys like Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma and not necessarily like talking them up publicly, but yeah, from
he had
what
some
I'm
really nice things to say about Ingram, though. He was really, really complimentary of Ingram in some quotes earlier this week.
Yeah, after that Sacramento game, for sure. Yeah. Like Ingram's looked like a player who's ready to take that next step forward. I think that Kuzma is also a guy who sort of tends to endear himself to players, to especially to people within the game. You know, just sort of one of those hardworking guys who is confident and is ready to compete every night. And I think that guys, teammates relate to that. And so I kind of like where he's at mentally, LeBron is, in terms of going into the season. Just like you said, it remains to be seen how that goes. It's a long year. This is the first year where he's clearly not on day one a championship contender for, you know, maybe the last decade. So how that goes and how he adjusts to that is certainly in an open question. But I would say that I'm neither optimistic nor am I pessimistic about which way it's going to go. I might skew more towards the optimistic side because that's just my nature. But I just tend to think that in a lot of the same ways that we can talk about are these young guys ready or how's it going to look with them and how is he going to relate to them in all of these different ways. I also know that young guys are full of energy. They're full of optimism. They're full of like this is where I want to go in my career and we're trending up. And I think in a lot of ways, I'm hopeful at least that could be infectious to even a guy like LeBron, who is coming off of a lot of years where there were like all of these expectations being saddled with, okay, like another finals run. Can we win the title? Legacy. All of that stuff that he's been dealing with. And I wonder if like, oh, okay, I'm not saying it's going to be carefree in Los Angeles with that media spotlight, but I am hopeful that some of these young guys can maybe help him like sort of rediscover some of that joy that has been lost like over the last year or year and a half in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's interesting. And hopefully those guys will actually play instead of, you know, some of these other, what was it? The mud squad?
Sure.
Misunderstood. How did LeBron capture it? The photo of like JaVale, Rondo, Beasley, like, and Stevenson?
Yeah, like misunderstood, like underestimated and something
determined.
Else.
Determined was the last one.
Yes. Yes. So like LeBron may be a great player, right? He's just not so great with nicknames, it seems like, because that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that's like the fact that it's the acronym spells MUD is sort of actually apropos for those guys, right? Like it's just they want it to be like some name that's not complimentary. All right, let's talk strengths and weaknesses of this team. I'd say the big strength that pops out to me for these guys, one or actually one of them we talked about transition, but one that's related to that is passing. I mean, they've got, you know, probably the best passing small forward of all time, or maybe, you know, Larry Bird might be better, but certainly they're right up there. Rondo is probably a top 10 passer in the league. Lonzo is an awesome passer. I mean, you've got Stevenson is a solid passer for his position as well. Ingram is a solid passer for his position. So that's the one thing that makes you think, well, if they don't have the spacing, at least they have great passing, and that helps you make the most of the small windows that do exist.
No, I'm 100% with you. I think passing is probably their biggest strength as a group. You know, like Lonzo, Rondo, and LeBron were all in the top 10 in assists last season. They've all posted really strong assist rates. Not only are they guys who can pick out finishers, but they're also like really good ball movers. They all show a willingness to kick the ball ahead to players to get and put them into positions within transition where they have advantage. And so even if that doesn't lead to an assist itself, it gets the defense on its heels and into scramble mode, which gives you an advantage offensively as a group. And so passing is up there for me. Kind of symbiotic with that is this idea of playmaking. You know, LeBron obviously is a wonderful playmaker, but I'm a big fan of Brandon Ingram, especially when his drive and kick game is going. Rondo is a very good playmaker. Lance can do some of that. Lonzo can really attack a closeout and can make reads off of the dribble. Kuzma, I'd like to see more of that from him, but he has some ability there as well. And so I think that passing and playmaking are two really good strengths for this team. Length,
you could add shot creation.
Versatility.
Shot creation too. I mean, an isolation play, although whether the lack of shooting will choke that off. But I mean, if you just look at the players on this roster, guys who can create their own shot, there are a lot of those dudes, obviously, starting with LeBron, who might be, you know, is among the best in the league at that.
Yeah, I mean, you can run down the list. LeBron, Ingram, Kuzma, Lance, Beasley is there as well. So shot creation will definitely, I like their positional versatility.
The length you're saying,
And like length. So I think that versatility, because of like positional size, positional length, the versatility that they have, and just in terms of guys who can grab and go, right? Like turn a defensive rebound into a transition opportunity by pushing the ball up themselves. Guys who can slide up or down a position. We were talking earlier about Brandon Ingram, who is their small forward, but being able to play point guard. We obviously talk about LeBron that same way. Their ability to switch guys like switch defensively, Hart and Lonzo and LeBron and Kuzma and Ingram and Stevenson. So they've got a lot of like size, sort of like this Don Nelson type team, right? Where guys can really switch and do a lot of things on the floor. So I think that those are all strengths. It'll be interesting to see how all of that translates though, considering some of the weaknesses, like do they have enough shooting? And even the guys who are their shooters, are they going to be consistent enough as knockdown guys to sort of force closeouts, which then create the ability to drive and kick and get a defense on tilt so that you can turn a good shot into a great shot.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at it, KCP, Hart and Kuzma are really the only guys that I would say are average or above spot up shooters on this team. I think, you know, LeBron, if he really wanted to work at it, you know, sometimes he shoots the three well. He did last year. Other times, especially when he punches a whiteboard, he doesn't shoot it as well. But, you know, he's not going to be playing in that role very often. He's not going to be, you know, I mean, even just to get enough guys who are standing outside the 3-point line, not to mention actually can make that shot, you know, they're just, it's kind of not in the DNA of a lot of these guys. And then you look at the 3 through 5 positions, you know, whether you want to call Ingram or LeBron the small forward or the power forward, they've got one guy really who's been comfortable in his career shooting a decent volume of threes, and that's Kuzma. So and then you look at the point guard position, they don't really have an established shooter there. Their two best shooters are probably KCP and Hart, and those two guys, it looks like, are almost never going to play together. So it's going to be real difficult difficult to get the spacing, especially when they can't get out in transition. And, you know, whether either somebody's going to have to shoot a lot better than they have, or I think they're ultimately going to have to make some kind of a move to get more shooting on this roster if they want to maximize their potential this year.
No, I agree with that. I also think, too, that some of this is just going to come down to volume and guys showing the want to take that shot, you know, and some of that's going to come down to coaching too. Like, where are these guys on the floor and where is the ball flowing to in order to make sure, like, where the skip pass, who is on that weak side, and is that guy going to be someone who's driving or who's most comfortable driving or who is most comfortable shooting the ball? And some of that is going to then come down to habits and what are we teaching and what are we telling these guys when you're talking about from a coaching standpoint to get them in positions where what we're stressing is the three ball needs to go up, right? Because you know, look, I'm never going to expect Lance Stevenson or even to a certain extent Michael Beasley to be like high volume 3-point shooters. But and I'm never going to expect that from Rondo. But when I'm looking at Lonzo Ball, when I'm looking at KCP, when I'm looking at Hart, when I'm looking at Kuzma, and then Ingram to me is like the key player in this, because Ingram, like we said earlier, he took, I think, a shade under two threes a game in the next, over the next 12 months or so, right? And so not only this upcoming season, but heading into the following season, that number probably needs to double to about 4 threes a game, right? And so some of that is going to be spot up opportunities, and some of that is going to be as a pull up shooter off of his own dribble. And I haven't seen any hints that he's at the stage yet where he's going to shoot the three when guys go under pick and rolls on him. But ultimately, he's going to have to start to take some of those just in order to get the volume of threes up. Because if Ingram can up his volume on threes, then he could, in theory, be another one of those players who helps sort of up the team 3-point rate to the point where the offensive efficiency is going to comfortably be in that, like, you know, top 10 range, because the top 10 offenses are almost all going to be high volume three-point shooting teams.
And not only, of course, because of the math advantage of the three, but then because finishing around the rim, for example, gets to be a lot easier when you have the spacing. The preseason, not encouraging so far in that regard. I mean, if you look at, just to give some scale here, you know, per 36 minutes, you know, so the highest volume three-point shooters in the league will be, you know, 10 three-point attempts per 36 minutes. That's your Wayne Ellington, your Steph Curry, you know, those type of guys are around there. Of guys who actually project to be in the rotation this year, Kuzma, 6 attempts per 36 minutes in the 4 preseason games, you know, right about where he was last year. KCP and Josh Hart are both at 5. And then, you know, those are the three guys we mentioned who are capable shooters. And you would hope that maybe those guys, especially considering that they're the only guys who can shoot, you know, would have even higher of a volume than that. But sometimes having fewer shooters means that your guys who are good shooters don't get as many attempts because the instruction is, well, that's
squeezed.
This is the one guy we're not going to leave. You know, like that's what the instruction ends up being, right? So, and then the next guy who will be in the rotation, 3.2 three-point attempts for 36 minutes, and that's LeBron James. So, you know, then you've got Beasley, Rondo. I mean, all those guys are under 3. And then we mentioned Ingram in particular, not encouraging. You know, he's taking less than 2 three-point attempts for 36 minutes. I think that's even lower than he was last season. So they're not there yet, certainly. And I think if this type of a level maintains, you know, they're really going to struggle to be a good offense despite all the talent they have. If those guys can take more, or they can get some more personnel, or they can maybe try to play those 2 of those 3 guys, Kuzma, KCP, and Hart together more, then maybe you can get there. But you're right. It's just, you can't be that great of an offense in today's day and age. You know, I mean, maybe they turn into last year's Minnesota Timberwolves, you know, who are the number 4 offense with a really low 3-point attempt rate and just get to the foul line a ton and hit the glass and, you know, do a lot of posting up and stuff. Just, they're going to out talent teams. Like, that has been done, at least in the regular season. The playoffs for the Wolves was another matter. But it's not encouraging the number of threes they're taking so far.
I do think Lonzo is going to help help there. Yeah. He shot a ton of three-pointers last year.
Yeah, he was right at 6 per 36 minutes last year also.
Yeah, and I would imagine that his volume is going to be very similar to that this season. I also think, too, that I really think they've missed Lonzo this preseason just based off the fact that he is just so big on trying to create advantage within transition and even in half-court situations. And I think that those are the types of possessions with when you can create advantage where you can get viable three-point attempts up. There were so many possessions last season, for example, where Lonzo is throwing these head-to-head passes to a KCP or to a Hart or even to Kuzma, and those are turning into three-point attempts just based off the fact that the defense is already sort of retreating towards the paint, and the ball is out of Lonzo's hands so quickly that it's a three-point attempt. And the player who has replaced him basically in the rotation this year or this preseason at least as a ball handler has been Lance Stephenson, and Lance is basically the complete opposite type of player than Lonzo Ball, where he really likes to dribble the ball up. When he catches the ball in the half court, it's instantly going into the ground for a dribble rather than looking to move the ball on quickly. And I really think that it can be infectious with the way that Lonzo likes to move the ball to sort of create more three-point opportunities, not only for his teammates, but then with his own personal mentality as where his scoring opportunities come from, at least how they did as a rookie, that he will get up those shots. So I certainly expect once Lonzo is more a fixture in the lineup that the three-point rate as a team is going to go up. Now, can he hit those shots? That remains to be seen. Yeah. But I think the volume too is going to be there. Yeah, yeah, I mean, no, he missed 30 games last year. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I'm with you.
The Lakers medical staff has not given a ton of, I know they've turned that over a little bit, but they have not given a ton of reason to be optimistic, although certainly given the way that they have largely tanked the last few years, obviously not last year because they didn't have their pick, but maybe their health record looks a little bit worse there because guys just were getting shut down. Anything else you see as a weakness here before we get into the predictions?
No, we talked about the defensive stuff. I certainly have a concern there defensively, especially sort of rim protection. You know, we talked about JaVale and his ability to sort of block shots, but there are sort of awareness issues that you discussed. But when you remove him from the lineup, if Zubac isn't going to play, there's just not another big body back there to really be a rim protector. Now, maybe you hope that like a guy like Brandon Ingram can develop into this like Durant style rangy forward who can like challenge shots at the rim.
He hasn't really shown
he's
that.
Not there yet. No, he's not there yet. Length.
You know, I mean, he'll have a few really spectacular blocks every once in a while, but overall, the blocks and steals just have not really been there for him at any point in his career, even going back to his college days.
Yeah, so I think that the defensive stuff is kind of where we're looking at with, okay, like, can this be turned from a weakness to maybe like league average or slightly above league average, because that's where they're going to need to be if they want to be like a surefire playoff team who's like in that 4 or 5 range rather than in that like 9 through 6 range that's really battling for like not only positioning but seeding.
Yeah, I mean, last year, what were they, 15th in defense last year by points per possession?
I think they tied for 12th.
Okay.
So they were right there, depends like what in you the look top at. Half of the league. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they were in the top 10 for a large part of the year. And so I think that's one of the things that gives Luke Walton a fair amount of confidence that they're going to be a good defensive team. You know, like I said, though, I have some questions about that. We'll see. Like, I like Larry Nance as a defensive player. I did not like Jordan Clarkson as a defensive player, just like I didn't like Isaiah Thomas as a defensive player, right? But I did like Brook Lopez, and I did like Julius Randle, and so there's been a lot of turnover with this team, and how these new pieces translate to an effective defense is certainly going to be a main point that's worth watching, not only early in the season but throughout the year.
Yeah, and the scheme is interesting too. By my recollection, they had the most success really switching last year, playing Randle Randle at center. Maybe they'd go with Kuzma sometimes, you know, and Randle together, but they would switch, especially at the end of games. I thought early in the year in particular, they had a lot of success just slowing teams down with that switching style. And, you know, teams would try to ISO on Randle and they couldn't get anywhere. And I think, you know, while Randle to me, again, wouldn't have been a great fit offensively, I did think it was a missed opportunity to just let him go rather than bringing him back, because I think defensively he could have helped them. And then, you know, he's another kind of mismatch breaker on the offensive end, but he would have given them, you know, kind of more of a good theory at center than any of the guys they have. You know, it's either JaVale or if it's JaVale or Kuzma at center, you know, I like Randle better than either of those guys. And then you could get into that switching scheme. And then, you know, if they're going to switch when JaVale isn't in the game, but they're going to play conventionally when JaVale is in the game, especially for a team that has a lot of young guys, or, you know, guys that you don't look at as particularly heady, you know, your Beasleys and your Lances, for example, could it be the case that they switch up the scheme, but they're not really good at either of those? You know, they can't play conventional pick and roll defense, and they can't stop guys by switching. So that's a concern to me too.
Last year they did do exactly what you described. They played conventional defense with Brook Lopez in the game, and then they went to a more switching scheme when Randle was playing defensive center.
But it didn't go too well. It didn't go too well conventionally, though, did it? Maybe you probably remember.
I think that Lopez was actually fine defensively, and that early in the year, when Randle was actually not starting and Lopez was sort of anchoring with Larry Nance, and both those guys could play more conventional style defense, because I actually think Nance is better in conventional styles than he is switcher, that those lineups fared fairly well defensively. And then they went to more switch heavy schemes with Randle and Kuzma as the center power forward combo, and those did well defensively. I think where things started to go downhill is when Nance got traded, and it was Randle who had to sort of oscillate between playing conventional scheme as a starter and then being in this switch heavy scheme as the lone big man, that things started to sort of fall off, right? And then you have all the injuries. Lonzo's out for a fair amount of time, and then Ingram's out, and then now you've got Isaiah Thomas, and things are off the rails, right? And now they're suddenly like an all offense team. And so, like, I'm very interested, just like you said, like, I'm not discounting what you're saying in terms of switching up the schemes and how that could be problematic. We saw that last year in Cleveland, right? Like, they really tried to go to this all switching scheme during the finals, and it was like layup after layup with J.R. Smith and those guys on the perimeter defensively getting lost. Right?
What you're saying is certainly an important point, that they did try that last year and it worked okay. And we've seen teams be successful with that as well. It's just there's certain guys on this team you don't know about their level of IQ for these sorts of things. But I think that's kind of more of an ancillary point. You know, I think it's more just a question of the personnel even necessarily than it is the scheme. And so I'll start by doing my prediction here. I have them for 48 wins, which is it's 0.5 under their over-under, although I picked that before I knew the over-under. The more we talk about this team, the less interested I get, or I'm sorry, not interested, but the less optimistic I get. But part of that is just because we have LeBron James is only like one data point, right? There's only so much you can say about, oh, we have the best player in the world, probably the best offensive player in the world. So we talk about all this stuff, and, you know, it's boring to just continue talking about LeBron James for an hour. So we talk about all the other things, and all the other things, you know, there's some reasons for concern there. But there's also reasons, like, you know, I'm kind of like two-thirds no and one-third yes on this team, right? Like, the defense is a perfect example. Well, okay, they can put out some pretty good defensive lineups there. Maybe LeBron tries more. Maybe they go with more of the young guys. You know, maybe they bring in someone else via trade halfway through the year. But as it stands now, it's really hard to see, like, what the theory is of how they're going to be a good defense. Maybe they're average, but it's hard for me to see how they get there. But, you know, at least with the way things are now, but you could very easily foresee that guys take a step forward, or you know, LeBron tries harder, or whatever, and you do get there. So I feel that way about a lot of these things. Same thing with the shooting and the lack of spacing. It's like, yeah, you know, I'm not sure if they're gonna, this team seems like less than some of its parts, but they do have some pretty good parts, and so maybe they do find a way to make it all work together. But you know, if you just look at these teams kind of relative to, you know, other similar teams that didn't have the shooting and didn't have, you know, the either great switch guys or a really good defensive center, you know, you say, all right, those teams run into problems, but this team also has LeBron James and they have these young guys who could really take a step forward.
Yeah, no, I think I skew more optimistic than you. So my predicted record is 50-32. So only two wins higher and just slightly above the over, or slightly taking the over. I think that they can be a top 15 defense. I think that they can have a top 10 offense. I believe in their young players. I believe that Ingram and Lonzo are going to take a step forward. I believe that Kuzma is going to offer good scoring pop as sort of a sixth man, and that he's going to find his stride as a shooter and scorer playing next to shot creators like LeBron James and Lonzo Ball and Rajon Rondo. I think that Rondo will ultimately, even if he's a starter to start the season, that he will transition to being the reserve point guard, that he'll offer some leadership, and while still playing at a very fast pace with the second unit and taking the ball out of guys like Lance Stevenson's hands and putting it in Rajon Rondo's hands, I think is going to be a benefit to this team. I think that they're going to get strong perimeter defense from KCP and Hart, and I think that Ingram is going to take a step up on the defensive end as well. He's really starting to show that he knows how to leverage his length. He's had some really good individual defensive games when guarding his own man, and during this preseason, and is showing a better understanding of weak side positioning in order to be a disruptor by getting deflections and getting steals from those positions on the floor. And so because of my optimism in those areas, and then you add LeBron James to that, that's where I think, okay, like, they're going to have something here. Are they going to be like challenging for the Western Conference Finals or like mid-50s wins? Like, no, I don't think they're at that point yet, but I do think that they'll be like in that 50 win range personally.
The other thing that we probably should talk about, which I talk about for LeBron's team every year since I've been doing this, because, you know, the normal aging curve, which apparently doesn't apply to him yet, usually would say that maybe LeBron is going to take a step back this year. Now, I think even if he doesn't lose an ounce of athleticism or an ounce of skill, I think just because of the lack of spacing they have in this team, and also the fact that there are these other guys that are going to have the ball in their hands a lot, I see him having probably his worst statistical offensive year in quite some time, unless some big changes happen, just because there's going to be so much less spacing than he's used to having in his Cleveland days. And, you know, even going back to, you know, maybe I could see this season kind of being a little bit more like his first year in Miami, where, you know, they had a ton of talent, but offensively they really disappointed because they just, you know, the pieces didn't really fit together very well, and they had a lot of guys who needed to have the ball in their hands. So I could see him taking a step back statistically, and then, you know, he's going to be 34 this year. I mean, and we've seen big time slippage defensively last year, whether that was he didn't feel like trying, whether that was, you know, just he wasn't capable of giving that level of effort, who knows, but, you know, is that going to creep into his offensive game? It's something that at least needs to be talked about. I mean, I'm done saying that, okay, this is the year that he's going to decline, because, you know, you're going to be wrong about that. But the way I've characterized it over these last few years is, okay, you know, if every year there's a 20% chance that he's going to have a decline this year, you know, is this the year that 20% chance hits?
Yeah, no, and I think that I think the statistical drop off to me is probably more fair to say that that's coming due to all of these other circumstances rather than like a slippage in play, if that makes sense. I just think that even if you remove questions about spacing or things like that, I just think that it's going to take a little bit of time for both his teammates to figure out how they're supposed to play with him, how much control he wants to seize and grab onto early during the season.
Right. I mean, I could also see him just really reducing his usage rate and sort of trying to fit in a little bit and empowering these young guys. And then, you know, maybe that doesn't go as well. And it's like, you know, a month into the season, it's like, all right, I'm going back to playing the way I play.
Yeah. Like Jimmy Butler did last year for the Wolves.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. That's an right? interesting comparison. Sure. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, I am the best player on this team. Maybe I should be, you know, the guy.
Yeah. Maybe I should be right? like dominating the ball and,
right.
and creating more shots and doing that. And maybe that's a way that this team finds their stride, right? Like, look, basically last year's LeBron was this souped up version of Russell Westbrook, right? Just in terms of like the usage and how he was used. He had the ball all the time and everything went through him. And he was LeBron James. And so it's just like, you know, he's not like a 6'4 point guard. He's like a 6'9 guy who's built like Karl Malone. And he's basically got the ball all of the time. And he was a walking triple-double chance, basically. And this year, I think that same production just isn't going to be there just based off the fact that, no, like long-term, and this is where I think the patience is going to need to be there for everyone, including LeBron, because long-term, the way that this team is going to be at its best is if guys like Ingram and Lonzo and Kuzma do take that next step. And in order to take that next step, they are going to have to up their usage. They are going to need to have the ball a little bit more. And they are going to need to have an opportunity to try and then fail and then try and then succeed and then do that over and over again until the successes far outweigh those failures. Because that's how you build a team. And that's how you get to the point where they are going to be good enough to be in that conversation as one of the contending teams. And do they make that jump all in one season? I'm not sure. But that's what's going to make this season like an amazing piece of theater for all NBA fans, and especially for Laker fans, right? Because they're the ones who are going to be right there watching it every single game.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see some of these Laker games on the West Coast now. They're actually a pretty interesting team last year after being very unwatchable for the 3 years before that. Now, of course, it's going to be amazing theater for good or for ill. Real quickly, I know we've gone on for a long time here, but there's so much to talk about this team. What do you see as the best case scenario for these guys?
I think the best case is probably in that 54 to 56 win range.
I actually went higher. I went 58 if it all works out. I mean, you know, maybe they stop people. But, you know, LeBron is just that good, right? Man. I mean, we're talking best case scenario. They got a lot of young guys who could hit here.
Yeah, no, look, if the defense is there, like, oh, suddenly like this team is like in that 10 to 12 defensive range and steady at that, then sure, then everything else falls into place. Because I'm not sure if, besides Golden State, maybe, I do not believe that there will be a team in the league who can turn defensive stops into baskets as quickly and as well as what this Lakers team will. And if they can play in transition at the rate in which they will try to play in transition, they are going to not only be such a fun team to watch, they are going to bludgeon teams in the open court. They just have too many players who are too good in that area of the floor. Best case scenario,
the coach is very dedicated to playing fast.
Yeah, so he wants, the coach is going to be preaching it. Their point guards excel at that, right? The Pelicans last year were number one in pace and basically got there because after Cousins shredded his Achilles tendon, Rajon Rondo and Drew Holiday basically just pushed the ball down every team's throat. And Lonzo does that naturally. Like, he does that like he breathes, basically. And so if they could actually turn defensive stops into transition opportunities, that's it. They're going to be out to the races and getting buckets liberally against a bunch of teams in this league. And so when you're talking about most realistic best case, if like 56 or 58 wins, sure, they could get there, but the defense has to be there too. That's how they do that.
So worst case scenario, and there is actually one other likely strength that we didn't talk about that I'll get to here. I would say 41 wins is my worst case scenario. I think I could see them being 10th in offense and 20th in defense, something like that. You know, I think that to me is possible. But you have to remember that LeBron James has, his teams have overperformed their point differential pretty much every year, I think, that he was in Cleveland. And he has been probably over the last 2 years, the league's best clutch player and had one of the best clutch seasons of all time a year ago when he really decides to take over at the end. And again, it remains to be seen whether they play this way, but I'm guessing they probably will because he's pretty good at it. So even if it is, you know, they do have kind of that point differential. Remember, the Cavs last year had a 41 win point differential, and people always say, all right, you know, clutch performance is luck, and there certainly is an element there. You know, if your team is shooting 70% from 3-point range in the clutch, you can't expect that to continue. But with LeBron, with the way he's able to play in the clutch, you expect that this team is more likely than not to overperform their point differential. So 41 might even be a little bit too low, but I think, you know, based on where I could see their offense and defense ranking, that's what I came up with.
No, I had my worst realistic case at 42. So you know, like, I think that there is a variety of things that go into that, but most of it is probably going to be health related.
Yeah,
you know, so it's just like, look, last year Brandon Ingram played in 63 games, so he missed, or no, I think Brandon Ingram missed 29 games last season, or 27 or 23 games last season. And Lonzo Ball missed 30, right? So that's 53 missed games between essentially two of, for this year's team, two of their top three or four players. And if LeBron misses any time this season, and then you have any sort of nagging or recurring injuries to Ingram and Ball, that already throws whatever, like, realistic scenario, like, forget, like, best case, but just, like, realistic scenario as, like, this is what we expect from this team this year, which is probably, like mid to high 40s, that submarines that, basically. I just don't know how they survive, even with improved depth that they have this year, which I do think depth is one of their strengths this year as well, that they replaced a lot of, like, or several non or fringe NBA players with real NBA players, right? Like, last season, Tyler Ennis got real minutes on this team. Alex Caruso, who was a two-way player, and who I like, right? But he was a two-way player, and exhausted his time up with the big team, like, yeah, right? And Travis Ware got real minutes towards the end of last season. Now, yeah, some of that was related to
Corey Brewer,
or, like, yes, Corey Brewer
as well. Yeah,
I mean, so they swapped out Brewer, like, Luol Deng didn't play at all last season, and they replaced those guys with players like Lance Stevenson and Michael Beasley and Rajon Rondo. And while we can talk pluses and minuses about each one of those players, I don't think that we can argue whether or not they're actual NBA players.
Sure.
Whereas with some of those guys, that's actually the case, right? Like, are they NBA players? And you would probably say, no, they're not. But even with that depth, if submarines could derail them, they could be, you know, just like you said, instead of, like, a top half of the league defensive team, they could be around, you know, 18th to 20th. And let's just say the offense isn't one of those classic LeBron James offensive teams where they're in the top five, and let's just say that they are, like, 10, then yeah, like, that's a problem. And could they be that? Yeah, they could. I don't think that's going to happen, but they could. So I'm with you right there. You said 41. I say that 42 is totally possible. I don't see it, but, you know, I'm saying that they're going to win 50 games, but it could happen.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on and going long here. There's so much to talk about with this team. I still feel like we only grazed the surface in, like, an hour and 20 minutes here. But let everyone know.
Maybe we'll do it again, like, mid-season.
Yeah, no, that would be awesome. Mid-season. That would be awesome. Let everyone know where they can keep up with your work.
Oh, yeah. So you can find me at Forum Blue and Gold. That's forumblueandgold.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Forum Blue Gold. I'm also on the Laker Film Room podcast, so you can catch me musing there about the Lakers as well. We'll be going to twice a week now, so subscribe to the Laker Film Room podcast and, you know, catch me everywhere. That's where I'm at.
All right. Sounds good, man. I'm sure I will see you at that first Lakers-Warriors game at just a couple weeks away now. So, for us, so we will be back. We're doing four episodes this week, so we'll be back with some more team previews, probably hit some news as well in our next episode. We will talk to y'all then.